Many people want to know when and how the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran will end, or if it will end, as well as what the real objectives of the war are. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Diablo Valley College philosophy professor Robert Abele about the war and related issues.
Trump seemed to think that this could be over in a hurry. He seemed to think it was like Venezuela, but it's not. So what's your sense of how long this thing will go on? Or is that just too much of a speculative question?
Well, it could go on forever. I mean, there's
just what he said he would avoid, the stupid forever wars.
Right, the endless wars. But there really doesn't appear to be much of an option now that Trump has made this move. There doesn't appear to be any end game in it. And that's partly because there's no objective, but I'll get to that in a second. But to answer your question directly, what can he do to end it? He's been talking on the stump about, we've declared victory, we won, we've destroyed Iran, all that stuff, even though that's not factually correct. If he really wanted to get out, he could declare victory and get out. He could do that. But the end result would be a total victory for Iran. They would simply continue the shelling of the military bases and make sure the U.S. couldn't come back. Even though the United States took most of its personnel out of those bases, temporarily, they say, Iran could continue on with destroying them, and that will get the United States out of the Persian Gulf. And so even if he declared victory and left, that's exactly what Iran wants, and so they would win. So the only other option would be to continue escalating. And if he continues to escalate, then there is no end. It just gets more and more violent. And Netanyahu has also hinted very strongly that if it got to the point where Israel's very existence was at stake, he would go nuclear. So it could go all the way up to that, and it wouldn't take long to do it. I mean, we know Netanyahu has no self-control when it comes to Iran. So on the Iranian side, it seems that they're into fighting a war of attrition, just like the Russians are doing in Ukraine. And that could last for a long, long time yet. So it would still cost them a great deal if they still wanted to go that route. And that appears to be the route that they're going. So it seems like there's a stalemate now that can only be accomplished if one side declares victory. It would have to be the U.S. because they would have to go home. And Trump's not going to do that. So it's just going to keep on. I don't see it ending.
Did you get the impression that Trump and his people around him thought that if they decapitated the regime, in a sense, if they killed off the leader, that would sort of do it, that somehow the regime would collapse?
Yeah, they said that. They said that repeatedly, that when they took out the regime, that would be it. The way that Hegseth put it was Iran would fall like a house of cards. And that didn't happen. So then they ran around in a panic. They didn't know what to do. What are we going to do? That Iran did not collapse like we thought they would. And so we're back to that notion of, why are we there? Why did we attack? The three main reasons that keep being trotted out by the Trump administration are, interestingly, the very same ones that were trotted out when the United States invaded Iraq under George Bush. You see the same thing, the nuclear weapons charge. We don't want Iran to get nuclear weapons. They're pursuing nuclear weapons. Well, we did the same thing with the invasion of Iraq. Well, as Condoleezza Rice put it, we don't want the last shot from Iran to be a giant mushroom cloud, you know.
45 minutes away, yes.
Yeah, so we got the same thing going there. And then the next charge, well, Iran is, as Hegseth has said, they're the number one exporter of terrorism in the world. I'll address that in a moment, but we saw the exact same thing when we invaded Iraq. Saddam was involved in 9/11. Iraq had repeated acts of aggression with regard to other states and on and on. Saddam is a dictator. So the next step, we need regime change. We need to start a democracy in Iraq. Same thing with Iran. The same story is coming out. So what I would like to do is I'd like to take a look at those three main reasons that keep coming up. The nuclear weapons charge is not entirely facetious, but the United States is the one that walked away from the JCPOA. I mean, they had the agreement that they needed to keep nuclear weapons out of Iran's hands, and Iran was following it. The IAEA said that Iran was following it. And so they decided to walk away from that anyway in Trump's first term. And then they started up. Then Iran did start enriching uranium even more and higher levels of uranium. And then they had a negotiation set up right before this attack in February. And the United States even said, we're right on the verge of agreement with all this. They're willing to allow UN inspectors in, and we're getting what we want from them. And then they attacked anyway. So this idea that they're pursuing nuclear weapons and we have to go in to stop it, that's false. That's a false cause. We had an agreement twice, just like the Minsk agreements in Ukraine, and we violated them, not Iran. So that can't be a reason. So then the next one is terrorism. So they want to say Iran is a terrorist country. And my response was, really? Iran is the number one terrorist country? Do we need to go back and look at what the United States is doing and what they have done historically? All the violations of the Geneva Convention that we have done? I mean, just take the most recent one, Israel's attack on the oil depots in Tehran, a direct attack on civilians that is equivalent to chemical warfare. The streets were on fire. The gutters were on fire, the sewers. Acid rain was coming down. Iranians were choking on the black dust that was falling. I don't know if it's called dust, but direct violation of the Geneva Convention, Part 3, Article 35, with regard to attacking civilians. So what the United States has done just going in to begin with is a direct violation of international law. The UN Charter says that all members shall refrain from encroaching upon the territorial integrity or the political independence of any other nation, except in self-defense. They weren't attacking us. We didn't do anything. They didn't do anything to us. And so then I say, okay, well, what are we going to do? What are we really doing if we're pursuing this terrorism thing? We're using aggression. And aggression is defined in international law, and I'm going to read it, is the use of force by a state against the sovereignty, territorial integrity, or political independence of another state in any manner inconsistent with the UN Charter. That's aggression. So who's the aggressor? It's not Iran. They didn't attack. So the terrorist issue seems to be a complete red herring. And even though they still use that from time to time, all we have to do is look at a history of the U.S. and see where the terrorists really are. And when you see Mike Pompeo even talking very publicly about the CIA being involved in Iran in 18 different ways to overthrow the regime there, you get that and you say, okay, well, who's the real terrorist then? Who is it that's really going after the civilians, attacking civilians? And the terrorist issue can be really defined by United States law. The U.S. Code Title 18, Chapter 113B, defines international terrorism as the attempt of another nation to intimidate or coerce a civilian population to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. That's the United States' own law regarding international terrorism. What are we doing in Iran? Exactly that. So the terrorist issue as a general reason to go into Iran, that's got to be out too, because Iran's not doing that. We are doing that. So that's got to be out. So
although they say Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism, meaning that they support Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis, who the U.S. regards as, I guess, terrorist groups, even though one could argue, well, Iran just has different allies. They're not really terrorist groups.
Right. Different allies. And who is the United States supporting in that regard? I mean, just look at Syria right now, what used to be called ISIS or Al-Qaeda. We are supporting them in Syria right now, and they're a terrorist group. So, and what about the proxy war with the neo-Nazis in Ukraine? We're supporting them. What about Libya and Iraq?
The guy in Syria, he's reformed though.
Oh yeah.
He wears a suit.
Yeah. Well, if you believe that one, I've got a bridge in San Francisco that I like to sell you. So these excuses are just look to me to be post hoc. We wanted to attack Iran. We wanted to preserve the way I look at it. We wanted to preserve United States hegemony. And we wanted to do this for Israel as well, to let Israel expand to the greater Israel that Netanyahu has been dreaming of. And so we've got to think of a reason to do that that sounds palatable. And it can't be any of the ones that they've talked about, because all the ones they've talked about are, it's not Iran that's guilty of terrorism or nuclear weapons. It's the United States. So it doesn't work. And the regime change argument doesn't work as well for the reasons that I just mentioned. So you have no clear objective. And that means both ethically and legally, you have no just cause. And if you don't have a just cause, you don't have a just war. If you don't have a just cause, then logically, you have no possibility of success. One of the primary ethical conditions of going to war is that you have to have a probability of success. And if you don't know why you're there, you can't possibly argue that there's a probability of success involved, because there's not. We don't even know why we're there. So the whole reason for going in is a giant canard. So the real reasons have to do with something along the lines of preserving American hegemony. And going back to the 2000 document of the PNAC, as they called it, the Project for a New American Century, and Netanyahu's 40-year dream, as he said on his tweet last week, "I've been dreaming of this for 40 years. We're doing it for Israel. We're doing it for our own hegemony." And that really can be the only thing that works as a reason. Those are illegal reasons. Those are unethical reasons. So overall, if you're going to have a war, the end result, one way or the other, has to be peace. And if it's not, the war is going to resume again later. If you don't have some type of mutual commitment to some type of coexistence and even cooperation where needed, you're going to be warring again. And so that's got to be the ultimate goal, not just, okay, we're absence of war now.
So when you say hegemony, are you talking about outflanking the Russians and the Chinese, pretty much?
You mean as the real reason we're going to war?
As one of the main reasons, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure that's got to be it. I mean, who is involved with Iran the most of the other nations? It's Russia and China. China gets 30% of its oil from Iran, and China has many contracts with Iran for the improvement of infrastructure and all of that. So China and Iran in particular are hooked up pretty tightly, and Russia is too. And that's why Iran has been consulting with Russia. And according to all reports, I haven't seen any really hard evidence that verifies this, but according to the reports, Russia and China are both providing Iran with military intelligence and satellite imagery about where their targets need to be. That would stand to reason because their targets have been very accurately hit. So I would think that they're involved with that as well.
And the possibility that China might get involved militarily.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. You almost guarantee a nuclear war at that point. As soon as China comes in, I think Netanyahu panics and he pushes the button. This is going to have to wind down before that time in order to prevent a complete catastrophe. If Iran gets hit with a nuclear weapon, it's going to be uninhabitable there, and China is going to respond. And I have read in reports, but I don't have any hard evidence for this, that China has said a nuclear weapon would cause China to respond to Israel. So how they're going to respond, I don't know. But it could get pretty ugly pretty quickly. So in terms of regime change, it seems to me that the real regime change that's needed is the Trump-Netanyahu regime. I mean, if you think about what they've done, I'm going to add one more thing here before I wrap up the comments that I had. If you look at just the economic warfare that the United States has declared on not just Iran, but other countries as well, where they use the dollar as a weapon now. They use sanctions, tariffs, freezing dollar assets in countries. The whole purpose of all of that is to collapse the economy of that country and create social chaos and hurt people, because economic collapse means social collapse. Because when that happens, people can't procure food or medicine or fuel. So it destroys wages and savings and pensions. So it's meant to be war by another means before the actual military goes in. And that's all illegal. That type of economic war is stated explicitly by the UN Charter, that only the UN Security Council may impose sanctions on another nation. And yet we are doing these sanctions that are bloody and they're brutal. So again, I would say that when you take all of that into account, the real regime change needs to be the Trump-Netanyahu regime. They're the ones that are causing the problem. The U.S. Constitution, everybody knows by now, the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, says only Congress can declare war, and the Democrats are all in on this war. Nancy Pelosi sounded like a Republican when she was talking about how important it was to attack Iran. And
They're not happy about the way it was done.
The way, yeah, but that's mealy-mouth stuff. I mean, that's not really serious. It doesn't matter the way. The issue is this illegal or not, or are we going to stop this? Only Congress can do this. So when you've got Pelosi saying what she's done, you've got Mark Warner, who sounds like he's got blood dripping from his mouth when he talks about the need for support of what Iran is, or the president is doing in Iran. And then you've got Chuck Schumer, when Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie set up a resolution that they wanted to vote on to force Trump to follow the War Powers Act of 1973. Schumer says, we'll vote on it later, not now. So the Democrats have completely collapsed their organized opposition as well. So that whole regime, a Democrat, Republican, and Netanyahu, that all needs to fall if we're going to have any kind of peace. International law has been completely abandoned. by Trump and Netanyahu. So that's another reason that the regime change really needs to go there. Go back to what Bush was saying about Saddam Hussein, that he violates nuclear violates international law. Okay, well, we are violating international law, so that means we should have a regime change too. The CIA in Iran, like I've talked about, the economic warfare. The real threat in the United States is the lack of freedom of speech that is impeding more and more ability to protest the war. When you've got Larry Ellison owning TikTok, very wise at CBS and all of that, plus the National Endowment for Democracy feeding NPR and CNN and all these outlets with their own propaganda and lies, the media is all in on that. So those are all indications of a regime complex that needs to change. And so I think we really need to turn our attention here and go here and look at what's going on here and do something about it. And that would put an end to the war.
Although you do hear in the mainstream media this idea that most Americans are not in on this. They're not supporting it. And that argument that it didn't go through Congress is still something you hear a lot, as opposed to, say, what the Bush administration did, where they tried at least to present some fig leaf of legal justification.
And they engaged in a whole propaganda campaign over all of that. So Trump didn't even bother to do that. He just said, we're invading, you know, or we have invaded. But the problem that I have with people being opposed to it is that what's going to happen is when the next election comes, they'll put the Democrats back in office, which really aren't, and they're not any better than the Republicans. They're not anti-war. So there's going to have to be a larger change that is done outside of just, okay, well, let's put the Democrats back in. Okay, well, they're not doing what we want them to do. Let's put the Republicans back in. That seesaw that's been going on for 30 years now, it's not working anymore. So there has to be something a little bit more radical that is done. And I'm not talking about a violent overthrow. I'm talking about people who need to start looking at other parties, third parties, and look at people who truly are opposed to the industrial complex that we have going, the media, military complex that is behind Trump and all and what he's doing now. And was behind Biden when he decided he wanted to move into Ukraine in 2014. That was Obama, actually.
Yeah, so, I could hear people arguing, well, yeah, you're right about the Democrats, but they wouldn't have invaded Iran. They wouldn't have attacked Iran.
I don't know if you can say that. When Nancy Pelosi steps to the microphone and Chuck Schumer won't allow a vote and Mark Warner talks like he's all ready to grab a gun and head to Iran, I don't think you can say that they wouldn't have invaded Iran, because they're not actually the ones that are pulling the levers. It's what they call the deep state, the people in the CIA and the people that are unelected and unaccountable. They're the ones that are in positions of power, the billionaires that control Trump in particular. Well, they control the Democrats as well. So I think the Democrats may have been a little more hesitant, but I think ultimately they would have done the bidding of their masters, which is Wall Street and the military corporations. It's not going to be any different. It's just Trump is just more radical than the Democrats. That's the difference.
Also, the issue of Israel being the only country in the Middle East that actually has nuclear weapons, that's kind of forgotten, would you say?
I've not heard anybody talk about that. Have you? They just seem, it does seem to be forgotten and ignored. And even when Netanyahu said that he would go that way, or hinted, he didn't use the word nuclear weapons, but he hinted strongly that that's where he was going, nobody said a word. It's amazing. There's a very strong hint that Israel will go to the nuclear weapons if they think that their existence is at stake, and nobody says anything about it.
And I guess it's good for the Israel war planners to go to war with Iran, because people might forget Gaza and the West Bank, and well, Lebanon's getting a little publicity for their attacks there.
Epstein files.
Yeah, right.
About that. Yeah, and now Hezbollah is back in the news again. Everybody thought Hezbollah was dead. So Israel moves their military into southern Lebanon, and Hezbollah suddenly rears its head again. So that hasn't been getting a lot of play either.
That's Diablo Valley College philosophy professor Robert Abele speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on March 16th, 2026.